Chapter 23. Time to Face the Music. Mrs. LaRue's mauve nails glint as she slides the ghost trap spell across her desk.
"I am dismayed," she says in a low voice, "and deeply disappointed in you three."
It's early morning. The sky is still strawberry pink, and through the windows of the headmaster's office, I can see the peak where Mr. Pinwhistle teleported my aero class, what feels like ages ago. Clouds lump behind the mountains, dark and threatening, bringing yet more storms. I'm still shivering from last night's adventure. Me, Darby, and Jai all slump in our chairs. I can feel Mr. Pinwhistle and Miss Nurani looming behind us, and on the floor beneath the desk, Wink is asleep, humming to herself. It took the maestros until dawn to find us. Apparently, we'd hiked farther than we'd thought. And spending an entire night pinned against a tree during a storm makes every minute feel like an hour, even without Jai yelping at every flash of lightning, and Darby glaring at me like she was trying to melt my bones. I was sure we would all die out there. The maestros were furious when they found us, partly because we'd sneaked away to perform a dangerous spell, and partly because they'd had to search for us in such terrible weather. They hadn't realized we were still in the woods until almost midnight, after all the kids had been sorted and sent to bed in the aftermath of musical zombies. They'd cut the game short at 10:30 when the storm had begun. At least they gave us hot cocoa to warm us up. I clutch my half-empty mug like it'll be snatched away from me at any moment. My flute is safely in its case by my feet. Only one good thing came out of the whole disaster. We're in a fraction of the trouble we could have been in, because the spell we played turned out to be no black spell at all, just an ordinary yellow one. Mr. Pinwhistle had recognized it and known a counterspell that would free us. So Rosa had duped us. Though in this case, it was for the best. If it had been a black spell we'd been caught with, I know we'd all three be on our way home right now. We might even be getting metal rods stapled to our ears, barring us from all music for good, the ultimate punishment.
"We were only trying to win the game," Jai says with a cheery smile.
I don't know how he manages to look so perky after the night we just had, but I'm glad the three of us agreed to make him the spokesperson. Well, Darby and I agreed to make him the spokesperson. The only thing we were able to agree on after the spell turned on us. Jai wasn't so enthused, but I guess he realized he had the best shot at getting us out of this in as little trouble as possible. Darby's too blunt, and I'm already on the thinnest of ice with the maestros. But Jai has the sort of charm that makes him every teacher's pet. And now he turns it on full blast.
"We thought we could trap the oldest students," adds Jai. "Then we could free the zombified kids and surprise everyone. Seventh graders winning musical zombies. Who'd have seen it coming?" "In retrospect, of course, I can see how that might have been bending the rules too far. We're very sorry, and we promise to never do anything like it ever, ever again."
He gives a sheepish grin, then sucks down his hot chocolate. I hide a smirk, impressed with how convincing he's made the whole thing sound.
"I knew we should have discontinued that ridiculous game years ago," Mr. Pinwhistle grumbles.
"You went outside the game boundaries," says Miss Nurani. "You were supposed to stay within hearing of the band."
"We got lost," Jai says, looking for all the world like a scolded puppy. "There was this crazy Picasso after us, so we ran. It was so dark and there were fireballs everywhere. I guess we just sort of freaked out."
At least the maestros seem to buy our story. But now the headmaestro is eyeing me.
"You three wouldn't happen to know anything about the Humfrog incident last week, would you?"
"Humfrogs?" Jai echoes.
"Humfrogs, oh! You mean the great Humfrog float? Ha ha, nope. Don't know anything about that."
He grins again, scratching the back of his head, but there's sweat on his forehead. Okay, so maybe he's not as great of a liar as I'd thought. But I guess since the maestros can't prove we were behind the Humfrog incident, they let it drop. Actually, they all seem sort of distracted.
Miss Nurani and Miss Becker are whispering heatedly in the back corner of the room, talking about the weather like we're not even there. I wonder why the weather's got them so on edge. Maybe they're worried some buildings will flood. In the end, we get sentenced to 2 weeks of detention. We lose all computer, snack, and break room privileges, and earn extra transposing homework, which is, of course, the most tedious kind there is. I can't even email Grand to tell her my usual pack of lies about how awesome my classes are and how happy and totally unhaunted I am. I almost call her on the phone in the library, where Darby calls her parents from. But I know I couldn't possibly talk to Gran without her hearing the truth in my voice. And if she found out how bad things really were, she'd drag me home in a minute, saying, "Told you so," all the way. Days later, trapped in a small classroom with Jai and Darby, hearing only the tick of the clock and the scratching of their pencils as they complete the work twice as quickly as I can, I find myself zoning out altogether and thinking about other things. Like how everyone seems to whisper when I walk by them now. And how Claudia even called me the fake Amelia in ensemble when Miss Nurani wasn't listening. Darby must have told the whole school about how I actually got into Mistwick. My classmates had been annoyed with me before because of my constantly messing up spells. But now it's like I'm a ghost, because no one will even talk to me anymore. All I get is weird looks and whispers behind my back. Only Jai will sit with me at meals. In homeroom, Claudia asks Darby if she can move into my bed after I'm expelled, knowing very well that I can hear them talking. Not even Darby ignoring her remark made me feel better. But I have an even bigger problem to worry about now. My test is in 3 weeks, and I'm nowhere near ready. Everyone at school is in a bad mood, thanks to musical zombies getting cut short, and also thanks to the rain and storms, which seem endless. It may have stayed dry the night we were stuck in the woods, but that ended the next day when a downpour started, and didn't stop. 2 weeks go by without a single day of sunshine. One of the boys' dorms floods, and they have to move all the 6th and 7th grade boys into the high school building. Jai complains about having to sleep on the floor by a senior who farts all night long. The ceiling of the shell springs a leak during one of the juniors' recitals, and the stage has to be shut down during repairs. Being trapped inside for days on end has us all cagey and mean. At least, I think spitefully, they're all stuck inside too, while I'm in detention. I'm not missing out on much. One day, when I'm headed back to my dorm after a late night practicing in Harmony Hall, I hear the maestros talking in the next room, which is some kind of teacher's lounge.
"I contacted the weather service," Miss Nurani is saying, "and they confirmed it. These storms are concentrated over Mistwick. No one else is experiencing this kind of weather."
"Is it a spell, you think?"
Mr. Pinwhistle asks. I walk a little more quietly, leaning toward the door to hear.
"It's certainly magic of some sort. And until we know the source, there isn't much we can do about it."
"Our attempts to clear the clouds with elemental magic only bring an hour or so of relief," says Miss Becker. "When normally, they'd result in a full day of clear skies. This is definitely magic, and it's getting stronger."
"What do you mean?"
asks Mr. Walters.
"I mean, the storms are growing more frequent. The lake is nearly twice its usual depth, and at this rate, the other dorms will flood too. I fear the bad weather isn't the spell itself, but the side effects of the spell."
"If you're right," says Miss Nurani, "then this is all leading somewhere. Something is about to happen, and we have no idea what it is. Nor do we know whether it's an accident or something intentional, someone targeting Mistwick. Without knowing the source, how can we defend the students?"
"We might have to start thinking about evacuation."
"We haven't had to do that in over 20 years,
Mr. Pinwhistle says.
"We've dealt with all manner of strange magic. We can deal with this too."
"Yes, but usually we know what the problem is and can make a plan to fix it. This time is different. This is something we've never seen. And our contacts in the other music craft schools are as baffled as we are. All we can do is wait and see what happens."
"What do we do in the meantime?"
"We continue as usual." That's Mrs. LaRue. I didn't know she was in the room, too. Her deep voice cuts in like the calming, steadying note of her cello. We stay watchful and wary, but we do our jobs, instructing and protecting our students.
The others murmur agreement. I turn and tiptoe quickly away, wondering what it all means. Something is about to happen. I glance up at the high window above, where rain runs down the glass in thick streams. Beyond it, lightning bursts in a sky dark with clouds. For some reason, I think of spilled tomato soup, the color of blood, and an invisible finger writing, "Watch out." Why can't I shake the feeling that this weather and the maestro's fears are somehow linked to the ghost of Amelia Jones?